Chrisley Wong.
The search for common ground begins today.
Founder of the Guardian Angels.
I got distracted. I thought Curtis Sliwa
from
the Guardian Angels was over there.
Curtis Sliwa.
There's a guy in a red hat.
Host of The Drive at 5, Curtis Sliwa.
We the people.
He's the New York State Reform Party chairman.
New York radio talk show host.
Curtis Sliwa.
Curtis Sliwa.
Curtis Sliwa is here.
He's really a New York City hero.
Yeah.
He's an American hero.
He knows the city. Live, local, on it. Curtis Sliwa, 77 WABC.
Do you recognize this band yet, Mr. Sliwa?
Hell no.
Come on. Blackwater Rising.
Blackwater Rising.
It's your one of your favorite new bands.
Well, this is okay. This is not as good as some of your past.
No. Brother.
Renditions.
Okay, so you
of
like
them.
The more driving beats.
Yes, of
yes.
course.
Yes, okay. Well,
of
this picks up.
Well, that's where Hightower Madison Square Garden, the great facilities provided to us for this broadcast, to all of you by NJDiet.com. You heard the voice. It means that today Juliette Huddy
Hello.
Is in the house.
Hello. I'm happy to see you here, looking healthy with your little Duane Reade bag.
Well, yesterday I was trick-or-treating. I was out there in Suffren. I was in Ramapo and Pomona.
How did they treat you? I know you were concerned about it. I was listening yesterday.
Well,
I was
knocking on the door of Dominic Carter in Pomona.
Did his wife
give
you any money?
They don't. They closed the door. In fact, the lawn jockey on their lawn is white.
Well,
I was correct on that. Lights
were
off.
As well, it should be.
They had big no trespassing signs out. They wanted no part of me as I had filled my Duane Reade bag, double bagged, up about half of the bag at that point.
With candy.
Right, but got no play. Once again, from Dominic Carter, who sold me Wolf tickets yesterday when he was here about how he was going to be there with his wife and how they were going to be so generous.
Well,
on
first
Halloween.
Of all, I have to ask you. Well, I mean, you're going to be up there. You don't get up there a lot. You don't get to hang out with him outside of work very often, I would imagine. So, why would you guys have just not made a little date? You know, meet up with Nancy, the beautiful Nancy, and his lovely wife, I'm sure, and guys, you know, go and grab a turkey sandwich.
Wasn't
that all you can eat?
No. Wasn't the occasion because it was Halloween. But anyway.
Well, that's, you know.
I wanted
fill
to
up
relate,
on the good stuff before
I wanted
you
to relate
candy.
To you a conversation I had while stuck on the C train, as I oftentimes get stuck on the subway system of the MTA, the money-taking agency, like a lot of our listeners. And while I was stuck on the C train at 50th Street, waiting forever and a day to go the rest of the way to 42nd and then 34th, a young man named Jonathan Silverstein came up to me.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, you know, Curtis, it was required listening in our household when you were on Angels in the Morning years ago with your wife at the time, Lisa. And I was sitting in the back seat and my parents were dropping me off. And naturally, I didn't want to listen to you. I was screaming in the back, hey, turn the channel. And they were saying, no, we're listening to Curtis and Lisa here on WABC.
Did you frighten him? Is that the point? Or
well,
he was
no.
just up politically?
Well, let's face it, kids, they don't want to listen to political talk.
No, sometimes you're very entertaining. When I was a kid, I knew exactly who you were.
How many decades ago was
that? That was about three.
Yeah, okay. So anyway.
Possibly more.
The point is, he was very, and he said, you know, because it was required listening when I was a kid in the back seat, I then started listening to you now because it's almost like I could hear your voice in my head as a kid. And I said, well, when do you remember first listening to me and Lisa at the time, Angels in the Morning? He said,
this is Lisa from Fox 5.
It was now Lisa Evers, her maiden name over there on Channel 5. And he said it was the time of the first World Trade Center blast in 1993.
Yeah.
And my parents, they couldn't get enough information, so they were listening to you whenever they could, especially when they were dropping me off to school. I said, oh, 1993. Slowly I turned, step by step. And as we were waiting on the C train, because again, delayed for 15 minutes.
Okay.
I had a chance to sort of review in my memory what it was like back then. Because remember, unlike the terrorist attack yesterday by the Uzbeki boy living over in Paterson, New Jersey, That attack, which resulted in the renting of a Ryder truck, not a Home Depot truck, but a Ryder truck by Ramzi Youssef and his squad, most of whom were staying in New Jersey at the time, including in a place that at that time was named West Patterson. They've since changed the name because of the stigma.
So you have something against Patterson. Clearly.
No. We actually, as Guardian Angels, we patrol Patterson. It's a real high crime area. Mm-hmm. But it seems like when there are people hell-bent on doing harm to us and actually targeting New York City, they choose not to reside in New York City. They choose to reside south of the Hudson River in parts of New Jersey.
Well, are you saying that there is a support over there, or are you just saying that it's just an easier, possibly these people don't make a lot of money, they're trying to stay, you know, fly under the radar, and so that would be the perfect location.
Well, I think,
but why Patterson?
I think
why not,
we can
newer?
All agree that New Jersey, New Jersey security, state police, local police, sheriff's department in Passaic, police department in Patterson, which doesn't even have enough personnel to patrol the crime-ridden streets, is not anywhere near as effective as the NYPD in New York City in monitoring potential terrorism. That's why for years, Police Commissioner Kelly insisted on sending squads of undercover police officers to monitor the mosques to see what was being said and the cultural centers and the bookstores and the Muslim worshiping communities.
Which raised all sorts of furor.
Right, but which is also right next to the home of Uzbeki boy responsible for the terrorist attack yesterday on the bike path, who was going to the mosque next door on Genesee Street, where he had an apartment with his wife and his kids. And that was a mosque that the NYPD used to keep under surveillance until guess who objected? Shamu El Jefe Chris Christie. That's right, who claimed that at the time Bloomberg were responsible for violating the civil rights of Muslims while observing them while at worship to make sure that no imam was getting up on their day of prayer, Friday, Juma, and giving a sermon that was espousing hate, death to America, death to Israel, death to Jews. I don't see anything wrong with that, but we don't do that any longer.
So this is a call.
Well,
this is a call to renew that.
We should continue to do that.
I never had a problem with that in the first place. And I mean, I understand the argument against it, but I think at this point it's pointless.
Well, why is it pointless? Because we
know. I'm saying the argument against it is pointless. I'm completely with you.
Right. But no, there are civil rights advocates who will continue to say that the police have no business going undercover into mosques, their social centers, their bookstores.
I have no problem with anybody going undercover into, for instance, churches. I have no problem with that.
Exactly.
I'm a Catholic girl.
Exactly.
But listen, send them in.
And
we know that
I'll
there's many, many problems with priests and Catholic churches.
I'll give you an example. Years ago at St. Bridget's, not far from where I lived on the Lower East Side on Avenue A in St. Mark's Place, Bridget's was on the other side of Tompkins Square Park on Avenue B. There was a priest there who was funneling money to the IRA when they were killing British cops and British soldiers. And clearly he was found guilty because he had hidden all the money underneath his bed at the rectory.
Yeah.
And if they hadn't gone undercover in St. Bridget's and listened to him give some of his sermons that was so pro-IRA, that pipeline would never have been stopped.
Well, so this is the whole, we're all wrapped up in the whole political correctness thing, which is kind of funny. It's interesting. I don't know if you saw the tweet yesterday from our president, who has not exactly been a fan of political correctness. He tweeted out, "I've just ordered Homeland Security to step up our already extreme vetting program." This is, of course, after what happened down in the lower Manhattan area. "Being politically correct," he tweets, "is fine, but not for this." Well, what? I'm just confused.
Well,
I thought he hated all aspects of political correctness.
I don't even know if our president knows that Uzbekistan is in Central Asia.
Well,
and not in the Middle East.
I'm not sure, but I'll
give him the benefit of the doubt.
Well, there were quite a few reporters yesterday who didn't realize that either.
Well, I know that. I happen to have learned quite a bit about the Central Asian republics of the old Soviet Union because...
You've been there, haven't you?
No, never was there. But I've hung out with Buharians, who are Jews from that area, who live in Forest Hills. A lot of them there.
Why is that?
That's become an enclave for them.
Their enclave, huh?
And actually, they come from the same area. And they were describing to me the differences between the Muslims who had come from Kazakhstan, Turkmenistan, Tajikistan, and naturally Uzbekistan. Mm-hmm. All the stans. Mm-hmm. All the stans.
Stans, yeah.
I don't think people realize how many of them are here who are productive, who are working, who own shops, who own restaurants. You go along Coney Island Avenue in Brooklyn on your way to Coney Island. There are tons of them, and many of them who work undercover for the NYPD, mm-hmm. who vet out information from these communities or act as interpreters or as people who are able to get information so that we can prevent terrorist attacks in the future.
Well, that's a very American sort of mentality, and just thinking that you never hear about these smaller minority groups until somebody bad apple springs from them.
It's like when the Chechen bomber boys,
yes, of
remember
course.
The two brothers in Boston set off their bombs mm-hmm. at the Boston Marathon,
the
killing
Sarnias.
And maiming so many people. Mm-hmm. That is from a Central Asian republic of the old Soviet Union.
Yes.
And there are many Chechens who are here. So is the president suggesting that all of a sudden we eliminate anybody coming in from those Central Asian republics?
Will the list expand? I know. I was wondering that, too, because a lot of people, they're not familiar with that part of the world. And they think, well, wait, Muslims, I thought they're supposed to be. It's Russia. I thought it was communists come from that part of the world.
These kind of Muslims look just like you, look just like me. Their complexion is Caucasoid, white skinned. If they weren't wearing beards,
almost a bit of an Asian.
Yeah. Yeah. But even with beards, mm-hmm. If you took the beard away, they could blend into the Caucasian society, and you would never detect, like, wow, there's olive skin, or, boy, they look like they're from a different part of the world.
Romania,
easily
Croatia,
blended. Right.
Serbia,
So when the president says he wants to crack down on the vetting, I understand that. But I don't think he understands the magnitude of how many of the people are already here. Jews who are from there who flee persecution. Because if you're a Jew in the Central Asian republics, you're not exactly a welcome person. And so before saying things like this based on one terrorist act, I think he really ought to just sit down and realize the scope of how many have come here. How many are productive? How many are in the military? How many are serving as interpreters?
But does
how many
this apply
work with
to,
the police?
Does this not apply to all different ethnic groups from all different countries? I mean, where's your line? Where do you draw your line?
Well, to a degree, but I think with the president, it's more a geographical problem that he sometimes has in lumping them all together. Like he claimed that we have defeated ISIS. It's like, really? Just because we've driven them out of Mosul in Iraq and Raqqa in Syria, in no way, shape, or form means they're defeated.
Well, ISIS now, I mean, this is the 21st century terror group. ISIS is an internet power at this mm-hmm. point. I mean, I do understand that they have been driven out and that their strength is not what it was perhaps 4 years ago. But their strength is now on the internet, and their strength is with recruiting and getting to the hearts and minds, of people all around the world.
Yeah. So let's not do a victory lap. Let's not high five one another. Let's not do what Bush 43 did when he was on the deck of the aircraft carrier saying, "We won the war in Iraq after toppling Saddam Hussein." Well, guess what? We're still stuck there.
Well,
and there are still problems there.
24 hours later, I mean, it used to be, you wait about 24 hours before you go from the comforting and we send our thoughts and prayers to the victims and
absolutely.
The family members.
Absolutely.
Usually you wait about 24 hours before the blame game begins.
Yeah.
No, no such thing. This morning there was the blame game going on. Now the president is blaming Chuck Schumer and the Democrats, as we were just talking about, for the vetting program that apparently, according to the president, needs to be strengthened.
Chuck Schumer is responsible for this Uzbeki guy coming to Tampa. First, he went
for
to Cincinnati.
For loose immigration,
Tampa.
Yeah, which is just not. It's just not.
Yeah,
it's not rational to say.
I blame Chuck Schumer for a lot of things. That,
I know
the
you
schmuck,
do. What
the
do you
putz.
Call him? Chuck?
The schmuck, the putz. I'm not blaming
I
Chuck
hate to
Schumer
be a politician in this town.
For
I tell you.
This lone wolf, Uzbeki, who came to Cincinnati first, then settled in Tampa, then has an apartment in Paterson, New Jersey. Was an Uber driver. And apparently gave nobody any signals or signs that he was a potential menace to society.
Well, except for the fact that he would show up to his local bodega and constantly yell at them about the price of the 12 packs of Canada Dried ginger ale or something to that effect.
And it was usually against women wearing the hijab who were there taking his money. You're right.
He just sounded like an erratic lunatic. He didn't sound.
Every day, he would go to that supermarket. He would take a 12-pack of Canada Dry Ginger Ale, which says right there, that's a lot of sugar this guy was taking in. He was drinking 12 cans a day.
Well, you mean, there is diet, you know. You never know.
No, he didn't have diet. He had the regular, the real deal. And by the way, he would argue at the counter with the women with the hijabs every day. It's too much money.
This is not the market.
It's too much money.
That's not Casbah, buddy. You got so the price is the price. We're not going to be negotiating.
Every day on Genesee Street in Patterson. Anyway, our number is 1-800-848-WABC. Juliet Huddy in the house.
This was an attack on the United States of America, an attack on New York City, an attack on our people. And it was the definition of terrorism, an effort to take away people's hope and spirit and to make them change. And what New Yorkers showed already is we will not change.
This New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio yesterday, did you get the sense that he sounded like he was choked up? I didn't see the press conference. I listened to it on the radio. He sounded like his voice was a little shaky there. I mean, how could it not be when you see such disgusting devastation, you know, just right down the street? I mean,
well,
kids, foreign national.
To be perfectly honest, as horrible as the situation is, it was first terrorist attack against us in New York since 9/11. The mayor, on one part of him, was thanking God this happened. You know why? And it wasn't Allahu Akbar. Because it's taking away all the focus on the allegations against his pay-for-play at City Hall as he goes into the debate tonight. He, on one part of him, welcomed the fact that this now dominates the headlines. Not suggesting that he was hoping for this, or this is a good, but it just happened to happen.
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately.
It's so appropriate for him that he's not going to have to be besieged by reporters asking him about the pay-for-play allegations. Well, let's go to the phones. Juliet Huddy in the house today. It's Leo calling from Warren, New Jersey. Welcome to WABC, Leo.
Thank you so much for taking my call. You know, I'm very confused. Why does Mayor de Blasio tell the communities to be surveillant of negative activity and then he handcuffs the police not to survey or look at Hamas? I don't understand those two. The people, yes, surveil, but the police, no surveil.
Well, I mean, you know, he was talking about that yesterday, you know, this, if you see something, say something. And I mean, the fact is that that's a very important part of trying to fight these terrorists, you know, just walking down the street. I remember when I lived down in the financial district and I was walking out of a Duane Reade or whatever it was, and there was a little kid's backpack, and I just immediately thought, you know, you just never know. I felt like a dork going up to the police officer standing down the street saying, there's a little kid's backpack. And it was nothing, but it's the kind of thing that you really do have to do in this day and age here.
Although,
in New York City, really anywhere, actually.
Leo, he's not alone in speaking with a forked tongue in which he says to all of us, see something, say something, but I'm not going to send the cops who are Muslims undercover into a mosque to hear what the imam is saying or the congregants are saying. Right there in New Jersey, your governor, Shamu El Hefe, Chris Christie, walked up to Eric Holder, the attorney general, at a benefit in Washington, D.C. when Barack Obama was the president, and said that he wanted the Justice Department to sue Mayor Bloomberg and then Police Commissioner Kelly for sending undercover new NYPD police officers into the mosques in Patterson, in Newark, in New Brunswick, in Jersey City. That's right. Shamu El Hefe, Chris Christie, was defending people like de Blasio who don't want cops surveilling Muslims in their mosques.
You know, a little territorial. Territorial action, too. I didn't come up with the idea.
Right, but he speaks with forked tongue. He declares himself, Chris Christie, oh, yeah, I'll crack down on terrorism. And then he doesn't allow for the resources necessary to have his own men and women go undercover into the mosque. And then he denies the best police department in the world from doing that, which has a special unit of 1,000 men and women dedicated specifically to this.
Well, I mean, you know, it's the same reason he fights with Governor Cuomo about trying to deal with the tunnel situation.
Exactly. Good point.
Yes. Thank you very much.
On that note, Juliet Huddy, let's get our other news headlines and updates. And I might add, let me give you some kudos here, Ken Duffy. When you came on.
Yes.
A little after 3 yesterday in the middle of the Michael Savage show. And with Bob Brown at the radio, our field reporter, Your reporting on what was happening in that terrorist act was as good as any radio station or any combined news service did.
Yep.
As you went right through the drive at 5. I want to applaud you for that because you kept our audience updated on everything happening by the moment.
I couldn't leave my car. I had to sit in my car while I was waiting to go walk the boardwalk, and I had to keep listening to you.
Well, thanks.
Marconi Award. Marconi Award.
That's right, for our own Ken Duffy.
Newscaster of the year.
Yes.
That's the last time I'll ever compliment you, Ken.
Live, local, on it. Curtis Sliwa.
Curtis Sliwa.
77 WABC.
3:05 p.m. A male driving a rented Home Depot pickup truck entered the West Side Highway bicycle path at Houston Street, began driving southbound, striking a number of pedestrians and bicyclists along the route. At Chambers Street, the truck collided with a school bus, injuring 2 adults and 2 children. After the collision, the driver of the truck, a 29-year-old male, exited the vehicle brandishing 2 handguns. A uniformed police officer assigned to the first precinct confronted the subject and shot him in the abdomen. The subject was wounded and transported to a local hospital. A paintball gun and a pellet gun were recovered at the scene. The subject's identity is not being released at this time, pending further investigation. At this point, there are 8 fatalities reported in connection with this incident. In addition, several people have been injured.
That was Police Commissioner O'Neill. Please give us a little volume on her microphone. They were shutting
Hello.
You out, Juliet Huddy.
Yes. Well, now we know a lot more about, sort of the color to yesterday. 5 Argentines who were here. This actually hits home because these guys were here. There were about like 8 of them, a group of 8 or 9 that were here celebrating their 30-year high school graduation. So same year, same graduation year. You know, a bunch of these guys just riding, thinking it's a beautiful day here in New York City. What are we going to do? We're just going to go ride along the river. And, you know, a few minutes later, they're dead.
Right. Now, no telling had he not crashed into that bus with the 2 adults and 2 children on it.
Stuyvesant High School kids, too.
Right. Had he been able to continue working down that bike path, how many more fatalities or injuries there might have been before he was stopped. Anyway, let's go to the phones if we can. And Clark is calling from New Jersey. Welcome to Curtis and Juliet Huddy here at WABC. Clark.
Hey, Clark.
Okay, Juliet, welcome to Hee Haw. You know, I've seen you guys on TV, and they would always put Curtis in, like, a little chair. It had, like, the school kid effect. He was like, he's waiting for the bell to ring.
Well, there was a reason for that. I had to make him, you know, be subservient to me, naturally.
Right. Curtis, you know, he fits in anywhere anyway. Anyway, every time there's a terrorist attack, Bernie Kerrett and Peter King, they put on their roller skates, and you'll see them skate the show to show and show. The experts, they say nothing when they comment on this. What's happening now is you're feeling the full invasion of America. These people are inside America. They will never do anything to stop what should be done is stop this immigration and this a flood of people coming from all over the world to here. We don't know who's in this country. And I'm going to say something that no one else is going to say. That animal who bombed Chelsea last year, he was convicted last month. This guy, they have him now locked up. I guarantee you, if any of us live long enough, 40, 50 years from now, you will see these animals released from prison because the demographics are changing in this country.
Clark,
and they'll, go ahead.
Clark, I thank you for bringing to our attention the person, the terrorist, who set off that bomb in Chelsea. Do you remember, Juliet Huddy, what city he was residing in?
He was residing in Paterson, New Jersey.
No, Elizabeth, New Jersey. Remember he was working in
you're talking about the Chelsea guy.
That's right. He was
working
in the fried chicken joint, the halal fried chicken joint. Remember?
Okay. Yeah.
Now, you want to deal with terrorism that affects New York City? You got to deal with New Jersey. Let me give you the timeline.
Okay, all right.
World Trade Center blast, 1993. Ramzi Youssef and his cohorts drive the rented rider truck into the belly of the World Trade Center and set the bomb off and almost topple it.
Mm-hmm.
Where were they living at the time?
New Jersey.
Jersey City and other parts of New Jersey. Then 9/11. Where were most of those co-conspirators who were involved in the attack living over in West Paterson, other parts of New Jersey?
But we haven't come up with the reason that they're in New Jersey as opposed to New York. They want to be close to the city, but to live in the city, it's very expensive.
New Jersey authorities both through Shamu, Alefe, Chris Christie, the state police, the sheriff's departments, and the local police do not put their potential Muslim terrorists under surveillance the way they've been put under surveillance in New York.
Will things change once Chris Christie is out of here?
No. With Murphy as governor, are you kidding? He'll be as weak, if not weaker. The point is, why is it that most of these terrorists have chosen to live in Jersey and operate under the radar screen? Notice, they're not living in the five boroughs of the city of New York. They're not living up in Mid-Hudson, or they're not living in Nassau and Suffolk County. They're living in New Jersey.
I mean, listen, that's probably a question that is not going to be asked of this character
from
yesterday. Well, no. I mean,
nobody
I'm saying by the authorities.
That.
If there's any official that happens to be heading into the hospital to Bellevue to talk to this guy, great question. Why? I'd like to know the answer to that, Curtis.
I can tell you because they're not under surveillance in New Jersey. There's no cooperation between the local authorities, the sheriff's departments, the state police, and there's certainly no mandate from the governor to do that.
But I'm always convinced that even though they say that there's no surveillance, that there actually is. Like, you know, the black ops types.
The only surveillance in New Jersey is the red light cameras to bag you and tag you.
Amen.
Anyway, let's go to Mike in Manhattan. Welcome to Curtis and Juliet Huddy here on WABC. Mikey.
Hi, everybody. How are you?
Hi, Mike.
You know, this guy couldn't be too bright. If he would have chose a warmer day, he might have killed 30 people.
Well, yesterday was a beautiful day, and I lived down there.
I was there in the morning.
Yeah, it's packed. It's packed.
Yeah, but it was cold yesterday. You had a chill from the water. It was a chilly day yesterday. If it was 10 to 15 degrees warmer, this guy might have killed 30 people yesterday.
Well, maybe people laying out there, but I mean, I was on the boardwalk in the evening, and it was actually very nice. And that was out in Long Beach, which gets chilly.
Let me tell you something. About 12 years ago, a Pakistani guy told me, dozens and dozens of people come here, they try to do harm. But once you come here, you get a job, you start living like an American. Why do the harm? You make your money, you might meet a female, you have children, and life goes on. You know what I'm saying? But many of these people, they're here. They've been here for years and years and years. They want to do harm to the United States and to the people here in New York. It's terrible.
Well, I got to tell you, Mike, obviously we know about this guy. We know where he came from, Uzbekistan.
Right.
He went from Cincinnati to Tampa to Patterson. He's been planning this for weeks. But he's an exception to the rule.
I can't tell you. Usually these guys are single who do this one. So this guy has small kids at home. I'm really surprised he did something like this.
Well, why are you surprised that he would do something like this when obviously there are people out there who are being influenced by ISIS in so many other ways, other terrorist groups, and they may decide they want to go out with a blaze of glory, that this is going to be their mark on the world, that they became a jihadist. They jumped on the Paradise Express, zoomed themselves to Allah's side, and had sex with 72 vessel virgins. That's probably what was going on in this cuckoo-a-monga's head.
Well, that's the thing. It's not necessarily only ideology. I mean, yeah, there are people who are motivated strictly by ideology, but then there are just people who are just kooks and, you know, they want to get their fame and attention. I mean, this guy that shot the suspect in the stomach, I mean, thank God for that because we need this guy. He's going to be talking, hopefully.
Now you
get
mean
a little
the,
bit,
the police officer?
The police officer who
oh, yeah,
shot the suspect.
Yeah, he was
in the
on foot post from the first precinct.
He looks familiar to me.
It's probably the last person, maybe one of your former boyfriends.
Anyway, I would know.
He was on a normal foot post, probably never thought in a day that he'd be put into that kind of situation. But then, when all of a sudden it happened el rapido, boy, he was more than up for the task of dealing with this terrorist.
I tell you what, when I'm walking around, especially in populated areas, Everywhere I go, especially if it's in the city, but even outside of the city, I'm constantly looking for a place to run. I mean, that's my mentality, and I'm sad to say, but that's the truth.
By the way, the cop who capped him in the abdomen, the terrorist in the abdomen.
Ryan Nash.
Yeah, there's always arguments that you should be living in the city of New York. You shouldn't be living out in Long Island, Nassau, Suffolk. He's a Long Island boy.
Well, naturally.
1-800-848-WABC. Let's go to Fred, who's calling from the Bronx. Welcome to Curtis and Juliet Huddy here on WABC. Freddie.
Hey, Freddie.
All right. Hi. If anyone doesn't know, Juliet is one good-looking young lady.
By the way, Fred, you were just on. Guys, listen, Fred was the same guy as the guy from New Jersey. Do you have no ears?
Fred, was that you?
The same guy. Anyway, let's go to Pete, who's calling from New Rochelle. Welcome to Curtis and Juliet here on WABC, Curtis. Pete.
Good afternoon, everybody. Good to see you again, Curtis.
Oh, pleasure.
I want to say something. All we hear from de Blasio, you say something, say something. I don't think it's getting through. I watched that video for about 15 minutes yesterday of this clown running around the city with two guns in his hand, a whole bunch of taxi cab drivers sitting in there in their cab, not doing a thing. If the Guardian Angels were there, this guy would have been bagged and tagged right on the scene.
Well,
these people aren't—they're not doing a damn thing. How do you run around New York City with two pistols in your hand?
Pete, let me mention, and the NYPD really doesn't do a good enough job explaining how to get tips in advance. We're not talking about when a situation goes down, but tips in advance before potential terrorist activity takes place. They have cops assigned to the special unit over in the Bush Terminal in Brooklyn, mm-hmm. right along the East River, the waterfront. And there are Muslims who live in our community who
right.
call them up with tips, who speak to their fellow Muslim police officers who then follow up on the tips. I don't think people are aware of that. They just assume that everyone in the Muslim community takes the code of Omerta.
Well, no. That's,
you know, that they don't participate. They don't want to vet out the terrorists. That is just not true.
Well, it's the narrow-mindedness, and that's got to stop. But, I mean, you know, something that I was listening to yesterday when I was listening to the presser, I forget whoever it was talking, and they were talking about how we've had this sort of anti-terror effort you know, within trucking companies, where we call these trucking companies and we sort of train the people that are working at these trucking companies, like the Home Depot or any companies that have trucks, you know, that provide trucks to the general population. And we actually train these people to sort of keep an eye out for things. And I couldn't help it but wonder, like, I mean, did these people sit there in these, you know, in these seminars just rolling their eyes going, yeah, right, like we're ever going to
You know what?
Be able to...
Based on what you've just said, I am predicting what the schmuck, don't make that the putz, Chuck E. Cheese Schumer will have as his lead item on his weekly Sunday afternoon press conferences that the media always flocks to.
What?
We got to have stricter truck rental laws. As if that would have done anything to stop Uzbeki boy.
Well, there are things to keep your eye out for. I mean, the fact is the guy had, you know, ISIS paraphernalia.
No.
And but
how would you have prevented him from renting a truck?
You know, I would just think you get the keys to the guy and you walk out and just kind of do a little surveillance before he drives out of the parking lot.
What surveillance are you going to do?
I mean, look around. They said that there was a flag, didn't they? Did I dream that?
No. Well, when he's renting
the
truck,
he had an ISIS flag in the truck.
He doesn't show up with the ISIS flag.
You know, I know, but you know, I understand what you're saying, but I'm just saying that there are just things. Just keep your eye out.
No,
you know,
I
open your eyes.
But the guy wouldn't come flying an ISIS flag to rent the Home Depot truck. Anyway,
that's true. But you have to pull out of the parking lot. You know, maybe they should have some cameras.
Oh,
you know,
God,
looking into the front. Which I'm not just giving some tips. The same reason that I saw the little kid's backpack and I said something.
WABC. To the phones we go.
You
Let's
know who
go.
Osiris was, by the way?
Osiris?
It was a god.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Connected to fertility.
Yeah, pagan god.
Husband of Isis.
Yeah, pagan god of the Egyptians.
Mm, there you go.
Yeah, you fancy yourself as Cleopatra. Let's go, Juliet, honey, to Bill in New Jersey. Welcome to WABC, Billy.
Yeah, well, everybody's talking about this guy driving a truck that he had a wife and kids. You're telling me that in this guy's house, nobody was aware of what this guy was doing, that there wasn't the hate of this country taught in this guy's house?
Well,
that gets
I'm
back
sure.
to the conversation that everybody had about packing up the whole family and sending them back.
Well, there's no doubt that the wife, obviously, is a key to this.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the mosque next door, which used to be under NYPD surveillance, in which everyone is claiming, oh, but we're all peace-loving people. Yet that's where he would go and bow, sometimes five times a day, to Mecca and Medina. So it'll be very interesting to see what we source up there. But why we are not putting that mosque under surveillance any longer is beyond me.
Ridiculous.
And that's because of Shamu El Jefe, Chris Christie, who wanted to sue Bloomberg and his police commissioner, Kelly, for doing that years ago. That's right. Shamu El Jefe, Chris Christie, friend of the terrorists, who always seemed to live in New Jersey before they hit New York City.
Curtis Sliwa.
Boom! The search for common ground begins today.
Founder of the Guardian Angels.
I got distracted. I thought Curtis Sliwa, the Guardian Angels, was over there.
Curtis Sliwa.
There's a guy in a red hat.
Host of the Drive at 5, Curtis Sliwa.
We the people.
He's the New York State Reform Party chairman.
New York radio talk show host.
Curtis Sliwa.
Curtis Sliwa.
Curtis Sliwa is here.
He's really a New York City hero.
Yes.
He's an American hero.
He knows the city. Live, local, on it. Curtis Sliwa, 77 WABC.
It must be like Putin that's a begin. It must be like Putin that not giving. It must be like Putin lives just one way. It must be like Putin no longer on the way.
I've heard this song before on this show. What is this?
It's number one in Moscow. Top 40. You get two bullets to the back of your head if you don't get up and dance to this song.
Do you like it? It seems like something you'd like.
It's okay, but it's perfect because this is Vladimir Putin's favorite song in Mother Russia. Yeah. So if he likes it, you better like it if you're over there or your room temperature, you're dead.
Mm-hmm.
But Juliette Huddy, who's in the house today.
Hello, everybody.
As well, hi atop Madison Square Garden, the great facilities provided for us to do this broadcast to all of you by NJDiet.com. The moment I mentioned Manafort to you this morning, you immediately began to say, what, three passports? And you were trafficking his passage
yes, I was.
Through many places that normally are used for one to launder money.
Well, you know what's so interesting? Yes, like, you know, we've heard of like the Cayman Islands for laundering money. That's a famous place.
Sure.
But, you know, there are a lot of countries where you can actually go in and you can buy, essentially, if you're rich enough, you can buy your citizenship there. So you can have dual citizenship. So I'm curious as to whether or not Mr. Manafort's, one of his multi-passports, happens to come from perhaps Malta, where he has visited many, many times, or Cyprus, for instance. And I actually was in both countries within the course of about a month, back in July. Yes, interesting. Cyprus, a very interesting place. My brother got married there because my brother was working was working for Fox News in their Israel bureau. And he and his wife, they got married in Cyprus, which is such a fascinating place.
Now, which Cyprus? Greek Cyprus or Turkish Cyprus?
Greek Cyprus, the southern portion of the country. Now, we went there, and I was like a freak of nature there. The cab drivers, the hotel people, nobody could believe that there was an American there. I thought, what? And they said, you know, yeah, we'll see British people. It was a British Commonwealth at one point. But they were saying, you know, we never see Americans. One guy said, I've been driving a taxi for 7 years. I've never seen an American until you. But do they ever see Russians? Lots and lots of Russians. It's not, you know, too far of a hike. But a lot of Russians are coming in there and they're buying. They're buying their citizenship there. You think you have to spend, you know, $2 million, you buy property, make a big donation, and all of a sudden you've got this passport, you've got citizenship, and you can start laundering your money there. They sort of turned a blind eye. And we were at the hotel, and it was like, I mean, it was Russian everywhere. It was fascinating. And this is one of the places that Paul Manafort and his cohort, Gates, were frequenting. Among other places, including Malta, where you can also buy your passport.
In fact, Gates was seen going in and out of these banks, constantly withdrawing money, depositing in different banks.
Closing his bank accounts down, opening new ones.
Right, which is clearly a signal that you're trying to shield your money from those who you either owe money to or from taxes.
But here's the thing. I mean, this guy was, you know, some people call him a kingmaker because he was the guy that would be, he was a political, a U.S. political expert, but then he ended up making all of this money, $75 million, you know, maybe more, going over to countries where you had these corrupt regimes and these corrupt types that want to be leaders, aka dictators, and he would help them get elected. And a lot of these people were shady, shady, shady ladies. I mean, you know, bad dudes.
Notice, we haven't seen anyone emerge in defense of Manafort since the indictment, other than Roger Stone, who used to be his business partner.
But this is a guy who was doing this for years, for the past two decades, and yet he was brought into the Trump campaign.
And remember, he was the campaign manager for Bob Dole's failed presidential campaign against Bill Clinton. Secondarily, he was also recommended to Donald Trump by Rince Out Priebus, who became his first chief of staff. So the guy was well connected within traditional country club Republican circles.
Well, he had worked with Trump, and he had known Trump for years. He was one of the guys who was behind being able to change the air traffic over Mar-a-Lago back in the 90s.
Yeah, but the interesting thing here is I've noticed I haven't seen anybody emerge in defense a Manafort, like all of a sudden saying, oh, he's a good guy. You shouldn't be picking on him. You know,
how can he be a good guy if he's getting these shadowy types elected, you know, in these very strange and likely corrupt regimes?
Well, let's find out from our many listeners out there, because I've yet to hear from any of our listeners. If anyone wants to give a high five to Manafort and talk about what a swell, top shelf, five star, classy guy he was.
Or to the president for bringing a guy into his inner circle. I mean, this is a guy who had, I mean, inner sanctum access for quite a while.
1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. And the key to this investigation, I believe, Juliette Huddy, is not necessarily the indictment of Paul Manafort or Rick Gates, his business partner, because they will probably not necessarily flip. It is the guy who has already flipped.
Papadopoulos.
who was the foreign policy advisor, as Trump said, a volunteer person of no significance. Or as Bob Caputo had said, formerly an advisor to the Trump campaign.
Mike Caputo?
Mike Caputo, my mistake. Listen to what he had to say.
And to think that a 27-year-old amateur foreign policy analyst is someone that's going to rise to the top of the Trump campaign defies credulity. I have no idea why people would think that a volunteer coffee boy like George Papadopoulos would get to the top of this campaign.
Well, first
it's
of all,
wishful
other than
thinking,
Manafort, Michael.
And it's going to be proven wrong.
Do you feel the stretching? Oh, I'm going to try to get myself as far away from him as possible.
A coffee boy who is when wired up like a Christmas tree, who is actually was out amongst supporters of Trump for months, wired up, taping their conversations.
Wait,
on behalf of the FBI and the special prosecutor Mueller.
Why don't you think Manafort and Gates are going to be a problem?
There'll be a problem in one way, but when you already have a cooperator like Papadopoulos, who has already taped conversations, no doubt, with some key Trump advisors, supporters, whomever, maybe even family members. That is far more dangerous to the Trump administration than trying to flip Manafort or flip Gates or anyone else who gets indicted down the line. Because if they have the documentary evidence of people who are on tape and they play it in a grand jury setting, which they may have done, as Papadopoulos pled guilty. He pled guilty to lying to the FBI. Then you're really starting to build a very strong case.
Aren't you assuming, though, that Manafort and Gates then are not these, you know, these diabolical types? Because, I mean, that's exactly what they are.
No, I don't think
that they're holding...
Well, let's say they hold themselves to the point where they refuse to cooperate, no matter how much pressure the feds put on.
Why would they do that?
Because everybody doesn't cooperate. I mean, remember, this is a tactic that's used in organized crime cases. In fact, there's a huge article in today's New York Times above the fold that Bob Mueller's chief attack dog was the guy who took down Vinny the Chin Gigante and got so many of the Genovese wise guys to actually cooperate who in the past had always refused to testify against the Chin.
Well, I know that you were talking about this yesterday.
Yeah.
You're very familiar with the ins and outs.
Oh, yeah, how they get people wired up like a Christmas tree. And then you find out months later, sometimes years later, and you're wondering, gee, I went out to dinner with this guy like on three occasions, had long extended conversations, which definitely dealt with the very topic at hand that the indictments are about. Gee, is this going to cause me grief? And oftentimes when the feds then come to you because you've been caught on the wire, they'll play you exactly what you said to Papadopoulos and they'll say, you want to make a deal? See, that's how they get more people involved. It isn't so much flipping Manafort or flipping Rick Gates, because they may just go, I'll use the term, balls to the wall. That means they're not going to cooperate. You know, they'll end up doing their time. They'll bite their lip and do their time.
Well, Manafort, I mean, he's, what, late 60s?
He's late 60s, but the point is, for whatever reason, he may decide not to cooperate. You can't force him to cooperate. But when all of a sudden I'm bringing you, Juliette Huddy, in, who had maybe six conversations with Curtis Sliwa, who unbeknownst to you was wired up like a Christmas tree.
Oh, can you imagine that moment?
And then I ask you, Juliette, do you know anything? No. you know, are you willing to help our case? No.
That's full on Dateline and ID channel
right.
stuff.
Right, and then
I love
all of
it.
A sudden I say, I want to play you a conversation you had with Curtis Lee. Right?
You, all of a sudden you hear the rewind.
Right.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
And then you say, now, can I have my lawyer?
All of a sudden, now that coffee's kicking on, I do remember
right,
that.
Right, or that, yes. or is, can yeah. I have my lawyer here?
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden you begin to negotiate. That's how effectively they use that tool. So that's why when you call Papadopoulos a coffee boy, go ahead, downgrade him, lowball him, demean him. But he had 3 months of conversations in which he was wired up that now the special prosecutor Mueller has to work with and his assistants. And the other thing that I've consistently said, and I think it's fair and square in this, is that there ought to be a special prosecutor assigned to what Hillary did and Podesta did and the Obama administration did mm-hmm. in digging up dirt on Donald Trump and trying to use that against him in the national campaign to become president.
Well, you know, all their supporters, all those politicos are all saying, well, this is what we do. This is part of campaigning.
Right. And I understand that nationally, you have what is called negative research. And
right.
I've explained this many times, that when you donate to a candidate, whoever your candidate of choice is, whether it's a local city councilmanic election, a town supervisor election, a state senate election, a U.S. Senate election.
There's a percentage.
20% mm-hmm. of every dollar is used for negative research. And what they do, Juliet, they sit you down. You're looking to hire me, right? I'm the negative research
God
firm.
Help me.
And Juliet, we tell you, Juliet, we've actually done negative research on you. And then you're shocked. Like, why would you be
actually,
doing that?
Actually, wouldn't be, but yeah. No,
and they explain. They said, because you're going to lie to us. You're not going to tell us the truth. And this is the dossier we have of you, Juliet. So we need to let your campaign team know of the dirt that the other side is going to come at you with, because you're never going to admit to this, which is typically what generally happens. And that's the shocking fact of how down and dirty our political process has gotten. The 20% of the donated dollars, and you know there's millions out there,
mm-hmm.
goes into negative research.
Do you watch the show Billions?
No.
They had, this was one of the themes last season. Exactly this. Hmm. The opposition research.
Hmm.
That's fascinating.
Let's open up our phone lines. 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. First up in the queue is John. In Brooklyn, welcome to WABC, Johnny.
Hey, Curtis, you know this guy is Papadopoulos. He's a convicted felon now. Any decent defense attorney is going to eat him up. And I don't care that he was wearing a wire, because then they'll just go with that it was collusion.
Okay, so we just saw someone who copped out on a plea get up on the witness stand last week and testify to the pay-for-play involved in the de Blasio administration. Are you suggesting that everything he said about de Blasio will be cut to shreds?
Listen, we can't even put Shelley Silver in jail. and you think they're gonna put a low-level guy like de Blasio?
Well, what do you mean low-level? He's the mayor of the city of New York, and obviously they're not prosecuting him.
His crimes compared to what these other guys have done, Curtis, are like shoplifting at ShopRite. I mean, let's get real. You got Shelley Silver still running around. The guy's never even seen the inside of a prison cell. And we're moving on to the mayor? Are you kidding me?
Excuse me, John. Shelley Silver was found guilty by a jury of 12, only because of the United States Supreme Court. The seven justices who voted together, rare occasion, both liberals and conservatives, voted to support corruption by politicians because none of them have actually been out in the streets. None of them have ever been involved in political campaigns. All of them are Ivy League graduates, and they're hopelessly naive, and they don't understand how this political process operates. So they actually voted to maintain corruption in the political system because of their naivete.
But
it's 7-0 vote by the United States Supreme Court in the case against the former governor of the state of Virginia, who was found guilty of being wine-dined in pocket lines.
I get, though, John's point, which is it's just frustration because you just feel like, you know what, you may have this guy, he may get up there, but you know, when the fact is that our legal system doesn't always work out the way we want it to.
Yeah,
and it should.
Remember, Mueller can take his sweet time. Mueller can go out there and get one witness after another witness and use corroborating information to put together a case. This is going to drag on,
and others will fall.
It's already having an impact on the Trump administration because Even his chief of staff, Kelly, the other night with Laura Ingraham on the Fox News channel, had to admit it dominates his thought process every day.
Well, you have, you know, some of the insiders there who are, of course, speaking anonymously from within the White House saying this. We're freaking out about this.
Well, when we come back,
walls are closing in.
You have to tell me what happened at your former place of business, the Fox News channel, when they reported on Manafort, Gates and Papadopoulos, because apparently there was some potential insurrection in the ranks over there.
Lots of texting going on.
1-800-848-9222.
Live, local, on it. Curtis Lewa.
Curtis Lewa.
77 WABC.
All right, so give us the nitty-gritty. Juliette Huddy, who used to be at the Fox News Channel, regularly appearing on President's favorite program in the morning.
Oh, well, I don't know that it was his favorite program at that time. It was Fox and Friends. Well, I was a Fox and Friends weekend girl. I started that show.
But it is
Julie
now
Phillips
his favorite show.
Well, oh, yes, yes.
And then you were on the O'Reilly Factor for many years.
Mm-hmm.
So I understand that when the news broke of Manafort's arrest, along with his partner and Papadopoulos, that some staff members at the Fox News Channel did not like the way that Fox was putting a spin on.
Well, I still have quite a few friends at the Fox News Channel. There are some fantastic reporters, some great journalists. I mean, just a lot of wonderful people over there. And I got quite a few messages and little Facebook posts that some of them that were deleted from people who worked there saying they were just horrified at the coverage, or I guess you should say the lack thereof, on, you know, what was going on with Manafort and Russia. And then, you know, the coverage that they did have was so apologetic, you know, and, you know, questioning Mueller and, you know, and his character. And it just, a lot of people were not very happy about that. And then I come to find a Business Insider article that's talking, the headline is, "I'm watching now and screaming, Fox News employees anonymously trash the network's Russia coverage." I mean, they need to start being a little bit more objective.
All right. But wait, but then on the flip side of that, I look at MSNBC and I look at CNN with their coverage of Hillary's involvement in the dossier and the DNC payments for it, along with Podesta, and then the sale of the uranium, and obviously the way the Clinton Foundation was able to receive massive donations as a result of that from Russians. And then he got a speech for $500,000 from a Russian oligarch as a result of that.
So you're saying
they've given little of any coverage to that.
Imbalanced is what you're saying.
No,
everybody's imbalanced.
Well, I've always believed that. This whole point.
I'm sick of it. Like, I can't watch any of these networks
well,
anymore.
Hasn't Fox News Channel stopped what they used to be saying, fair and balanced?
I don't watch it.
I know, but they're not fair and balanced. And no media outlet is fair and balanced.
For sure.
But they all have their own spin. If you go to Europe, you go to South America, and you watch TV or you listen to radio or you read the newspapers, they'll let you know. We're left wing, we're right wing.
I feel like it's just gotten so much more blatant and obvious, though, in the last several years. And it gets to the point where it's so insincere.
Well,
and
I know that most people, Juliet, they don't have the time because of all the burdens they have each day, working sometimes two jobs, taking care of families, that they don't have the luxury that I have or maybe even you have to sort of see what is MSNBC spin? What is the Fox News Channel spin? Sometimes they have only one news outlet, one source.
I get that on Twitter. Right. I get Twitter for my who's being the most imbalanced today news.
Does that include the president?
Oh, of course it does.
So you're on his, you get his Twitter feed.
I do. That's how I start my day. I can't start my day without saying
you're up like at 5 in the morning when he first starts tweeting away.
Sad! Exclamation point.
And you know who,
lame!
You know who else is on his feet? Ken Duffy.
Oh, I'm sure he is.
All reporters are on his feed because, let's face it, he leads and then, unfortunately, a lot of times we all follow him.
Wait, Ken Duffy or the president?
The president.
I follow Ken Duffy. It sets the tone for the day. It really does.
Anyway, on that note, we're going to get into Chief of Staff Kelly's defense of Robert E. Lee. Because historically, he said, hey, you know, it was all about states' rights. States were more important to an American back then than loyalty to country. Yep, we're going to delve into that. But first, let's get the news headlines and updates from Ken Duffy.
He knows the city. Live, local, on it. Curtis Lewa, 77 WABC.
If heaven ain't a lot like Dixie, I don't want to go.
139, Juliette Huddy. Yeehaw! In the house.
I just do not I can't do country music. I can't.
I know, but you lived south of the Mason-Dixon line.
I lived in Miami. I mean, I lived in Northern Virginia, which is basically D.C.
Right, where they still fly the Stars and Bars, the flag of treason.
No, not in Northern Virginia. I never saw Stars and Bars in Northern Virginia.
You never saw the Johnny Red flag in Northern Virginia?
I don't believe I did. No.
Not in Arlington? Not in Fairfax?
I don't believe I did.
Wow.
No, why? I don't think it was. No,
not as prominent as up there in Western Virginia for sure. But still, I'm surprised. You must have been with all the snowbirds.
Western or Western?
Western.
Okay. Virginia. I thought you're mixing up Reston, and I didn't know what you were saying.
Right, but you must have been with all the snowbirds who have moved down from the north to Virginia.
Well, they moved down to Southern Virginia, like Richmond. They don't move right outside of D.C. I lived in McLean. My high school, Langley High School, backed up to the CIA.
Ah.
So every time there were bomb threats at the CIA, we'd be able to boot it from school. It was great.
You know, Juliet Huddy.
I've been around. Is that what you're going to bet?
You're like a gypsy.
Yeah.
You know, when we track your movements.
I know.
From childhood through your teenage years to your adult years.
You know how many times I have literally moved into a new dwelling?
Well, you know, it used to be.
Over 60 times.
It used to be that we would hold a rent party, that all the neighbors would get together in the street and we'd all contribute. We would feed the hobo stew because they hadn't paid rent in 3 months and they were going to get evicted. You must have been part of that, constantly being evicted.
As you can see from my relationship, my romantic past, I used to get bored very easy.
Oh, I see.
So I need to kind of change my... my scene.
Your boyfriends were sort of like the layers of a snake's skin. You would shed them.
I'd shed them and slither over to a new domain.
Oh, my God. But anyway, let's try this on for size.
I've settled.
The chief of staff of Donald Trump, who you would think is busy enough just trying to manage the president and keep him cool, calm, and collected.
Oh, man.
Has decided to become a spokesperson for the administration about many of the controversial issues that the president has tweeted about.
Well, they ask him. I mean, to be fair, reporters ask him.
I know, but
he wants to be open.
A lot of presidential chiefs of staff in the past have passed on that, saying that's really not my function.
But I think he's hoping that maybe if I say something, it'll skew the headlines my direction as opposed to
the president. Well, he said that about General Robert E. Lee the other night with Laura Ingraham on the Fox News channel. And let's go to the audio tape.
I would tell you that Robert E. Lee was an honorable man. He was a man that gave up his country to fight for his state, which in 150 years ago was more important than country. It was always loyalty to state first back in those days. Now it's different today. But the lack of an ability to compromise led to the Civil War, and men and women of good faith on both sides made their stand where their conscience had them make their stand.
The lack of ability to compromise struck me yesterday as being said by someone who is clearly not a historian, clearly has not studied history, because prior to the Civil War, Juliet Huddy, there were all kinds of compromises. There were the great orators in the Senate, Henry Clay and Webster, who were always compromising between the South and the North.
Well, there was a lack of ability to compromise on one particular subject, and we all know what
slavery.
That was. Exactly, and you had the Southern firebrands who refused to bend.
Well, it's interesting because I first remember in studying history, there was brought to our attention by Alan Topel, who was the best teacher I ever had at PS 114, my fifth grade teacher. He said the Missouri Compromise. And I remember being the Weisenheimer kid. I said, oh, you mean the show me state, because they're like mules. They're burros.
I went
like
to college
donkeys.
There. Watch it.
Oh, you went to college here also. Every place I mentioned, you've been there.
I know, it's true.
So you were at the journalism school?
No, I went there for the journalism school. And believe me, I would not have set foot in the middle of Missouri for any other reason. But I ended up discovering boys and drinking my freshman year. And I didn't get
Well, so you're familiar with Missouri. And I don't know if they taught you about the Missouri Compromise, which meant that Missouri, which wanted to enter the Union, would enter as a slave state. That was the compromise. And anything north of this 36th parallel, those would be free states, and those south of it would be slave states. So that was the first of many compromises to come. That was back in 1820. And there were a series of compromises that consisted to take place right on up to the actual Civil War itself. And then when Chief of Staff Kelly suggests compromise.
Oh, I feel like you're kind of car seat. I mean,
I'm just mentioning the many compromises. Okay. There was the Kansas-Nebraska Act. There was a series of other. But the point being is, how do you compromise on slavery? And I'd like to ask our listeners out there, what kind of a compromise would have been satisfactory for everyone to have avoided the Civil War and the many dead on both sides that would have followed?
Yeah, which is why his comments became such a lightning rod.
Well, anyway, our number is 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. Now, I never asked you what you thought about the movement to remove images of Robert E. Lee, Jeff Davis.
Let me start on this one.
Sure.
First of all, I've said this before, I believe on this show, that we don't typically, we don't put up these statues to say that, to give these men credit for being honorable men. That's not why we put statues up. They have places in history. They've affected, they've affected the movement in history, in our country's history. That's why we have them up there. It's not to say, wow, this was a really great guy. That's not why we have statues. But that's a whole other thing. I feel like in a century from now or two centuries from now, our ancestors are, ancestors are going to be looking back at us and just going, God, these people that lived in 2017, oh my God, what cave people they were. You know, they had the opportunity, the options of having electric cars, but they still drove these big gas guzzlers. I mean, there's so many things that you could point out that we're going to be looked at, you know, centuries from now as just heathens, cave people, and just, you know, and disgraceful people who tried to hurt the earth and hurt each other.
So, would you actually remove the statues of Robert E. Lee and Stonewall Jackson and Jeff Davis?
No, because it brings up, you're talking about history. You're talking about men who affected our history. And it's good to talk about this stuff.
All right, but let me ask you a question. Richmond, Virginia, which was the last Confederate capital before they capitulated at Appomattox when Robert E. Lee gave his sword to Ulysses S. Grant and surrendered. If you go to Richmond, because I have guardian angels in Richmond, they're predominantly black. And we've walked what they call the Confederate Row. Mm-hmm. They have block after block of statues to Confederate war heroes and to Jeff Davis. And at the very
end... Well, war heroes in some people's minds, but
well,
I think as we... I can see what you're saying, but now we're talking about, you know, when you look in the grand scheme of things, I mean, how heroic were they when they were fighting for a cause that is just a despicable cause?
I understand that, but to the Rebs, to a lot of the folks down south, they, you know, the South will rise again. That's a part of their history. They're proud of what they did. At the very end, in order to capitulate to the blacks who were upset with all these statues that promoted slavery, obviously talked about slavery as part of the history,
right,
as if it was a good thing, they put up a statue at the very end of Arthur Ashe, the great tennis player who died at an early age because he was from Richmond, Virginia himself. So you look at that and you say, huh? If it was up to me, I would take dynamite to every one of those Confederate statues.
Why?
Because
Why?
They were traitors. They were rebels.
But, you know, that's like, you've been to St. Petersburg, right? I heard you talking about, you know, are you offended that there's a statue of Lenin? Are you offended that there's a statue of Lenin here in New York City?
St. Petersburg, you mean in Russia?
Russia.
Yeah, I've been there.
No, in Florida.
Yes.
You know that Stalin statue down there in St.
Petersburg? There are a lot of Russian immigrants here who've retired, who've gone down to the beaches of St. Petersburg in Florida.
These are people who affected history. These are people who are significant players, whether they're lightning rods or whether they are to be, you know, lauded like Martin Luther King. They're significant figures in history, and I think it's you have a statue there with a little bit of a blip about what they did. It makes you interested in finding out a little bit more about their place in history and whether it was a good place or
Juliet,
not.
Juliet, if you were black in a city like Richmond that is predominantly black, and you are reminded of slavery every day, I don't think you'd be all that in a promotional mode of wanting to keep those statues there. Because to me, that was the worst of times in our history, where men went to war to preserve slavery.
I agree. I just don't, you know, well, I'm not going to pretend like I have, you know, an experience of somebody who's been discriminated against for the most part. You know, my life's been pretty damn easy, but you know, I just think removing these things, you're removing talking points.
Move them to a museum. Have a museum of the Confederacy, and then you can go there if you want to bring your children, if you want to educate them about.
Bring your children to these statues and talk about. Look at this. This man was a slave owner, and look where we are now. Let's make sure that never happens again. Let's make sure that stays in our minds, not to remind us of our ancestors.
But that's not what happens when you're down in Richmond. I've seen people show up, and they're talking about the South will rise again.
Yeah, well, I think the general population around this country does not feel that way.
I would hope. Depends on which region of the country you're from.
That's
anyway,
true, I'll tell you. Yeah, there are some interesting people out in Missouri.
1-800-848-WABC. To the phones we go. It's Brandon who's calling from Wayne. Welcome to Curtis and Juliet Huddy here on WABC. Brandon.
Hey, good afternoon, guys. Good to talk to you today.
Hi.
Hi. Look, I just got a couple points here. You know, it seems like nobody really cared about these statues when Barack Obama was president. And then at the same time, no one really cares about these statues anymore. And if you're going for equality and equality only, then we need to eliminate, like, the African American History Month. We need to eliminate minority scholarships in general. Let's treat everyone equally and move forward from here.
What does that have to do with Confederate statues of a group of men who purposely chose to fight against the Union to break away? They were rebels. They were traitors. What does that have to do with African American, which is a month, which is February, or giving out scholarships to minorities?
It has to do with slavery. And in turn, equality. I mean, it's not going to... Removing the statue is not going to change the history of it. It's still going to get done.
No, but that's what museums are for, Brandon. That's what museums are for. So create a museum for the Confederacy. Have your statues in there. People can come. They can look. They can be educated about our history. But you don't have to have it in everyone's face that we're promoting the activities of men who fought for the right to continue to enslave people.
Bigger point, though, Brandon, your bigger point is that you see it doesn't seem like it's an equal type of situation, that maybe white people should have their own month. Is that what you're saying?
White people have their own month?
It sounded like that's, we that's have, where he was going with that one.
We have quite a few months, so.
It's called November, December, January.
Exactly. Anyway, up next, Juliet is suggesting that men go to spas. Really? I'm not.
Yep.
Curtis Sliwa.
Boom!
The search for common ground begins today.
Founder of the Guardian Angels.
I got distracted. I thought Curtis Sliwa
from
the Guardian Angels was over there.
Curtis Sliwa.
There's a guy in a red hat.
Host of The Drive at 5, Curtis Sliwa.
We the people.
He's the New York State Reform Party chairman.
New York radio talk show host.
Curtis Sliwa.
Curtis Sliwa.
Curtis Sliwa is here.
He's really a New York City hero.
Yeah.
He's an American hero.
He knows the city. Live, local, on it. Curtis Sliwa, 77 WABC.
This is how we do it. This is how we do it. La, 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 la.
Come on, Curtis.
Nah, legend movie.
Oh, come on.
Sorry.
Are you kidding me right now?
Sorry, Juliet, buddy. This song does not move me.
This song, you can have zero ability to dance. You can just be the most, like, goofy goofball on the planet when it comes to moves. You can just sit there and bop to this song, and it just...
You mean you can diddy bop, even shake, rattle, and roll?
Sway.
Nah, I consider it low budget.
Tonight.
Low budget. Not the best.
Well, I was going to suggest...
Not the best
Toxic,
dance song.
Toxic by Britney Spears.
Oh, no, I hate Britney Spears.
Oh, jeez.
She's psychotic. Okay.
She's psychotic.
And toxic. Psychotic and toxic.
Okay. Well, that's very nice.
But anyway,
gotten her act together.
As we are high atop Madison Square Garden, these great facilities that have been provided to us by NJDiet.com to talk to all of you, a major historical precedent has been set.
This is big stuff for you, Curtis Sliwa.
Well, actually, it's big stuff for you because I'm sure in your many travels over the years, Juliet Huddy, that you were one of many women who are known to have been patrons at Hogs and Heifers Bar.
No, I was there once, I believe, maybe twice, and I did not find it a fun experience at all.
You didn't take your bra off and add it to the 18,000 bras on the wall?
I didn't get. I'm not the type that gets on the bar and dances. I prefer to sort of be background when it comes to that kind of stuff.
Background.
I have no talent in that department.
Well,
I'm terrible.
Remember, the whole focus of not just Hogs and Heifers but other gin mills was that the music would play from the jukebox, and then immediately people would get up and want to dance.
Yeah, which is the greatest thing ever. You know.
And I can remember when Julia Roberts jumped on to the bar area and started strutting her stuff, that it came to the attention of my very dear Kumbadichich, then Mayor Rudy Giuliani, who decided that there would be prohibition against all forms of dancing in gin mills. And he enforced what had been the law established for cabarets and restaurants and bars by the New York City Department of Consumer Affairs, which had been put into place way back in the 1920s, which meant
prohibition,
that they could padlock your establishment if, in fact, you were allowing your patrons to dance.
Am I mistaken? I mean, didn't this kind of go back? Didn't this have racist roots? Wasn't this sort of predicated on the fact that certain people who were running the city at the time also, they didn't want performers like Billie Holiday, Thelonious Monk, people who were not white to come into the city and to start performing?
Yeah, well, they didn't want folks going up to Harlem, as many white people did, to mix with blacks. And then as a result of the entertainment that you just described, the performances putting on, whether it was the Cotton Club or Minton's, I think it was Minton's Paradise or Minton's Palace, in clubs of that nature, they didn't want to see whites and blacks mixing on the dance floor, or really mixing in any way, shape, or form. So they put that law into effect that prohibited people from dancing in a cabaret, in a bar, or a restaurant.
It's called the cabaret law.
Right. And in fact, would even eliminate toe tapping in some instances, the real Puritans out there. And now that law has been repealed after almost a century. And in complete defiance of Rudy Giuliani, who had cracked down on that kind of behavior. Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, is this a day of liberation for all of you? Have you always wanted to get up and dance when you've been at a bar?
Hey, listen, if you're listening to this and you happen to be from another country and you came to the United States, you came to New York City thinking this is the city that never sleeps, and all of a sudden you're like, I'm going to fall asleep because I can't even bop around to the music that I'm hearing at a club. I have to just stand there. Or I think there are like 25,000 venues, and only, what is it, like 100 or 200 of them actually have these cabaret licenses
that permit to dance.
That's crazy. So yeah. So technically, you can get fined, and the establishment can be closed down.
Yeah, they can padlock
if these things were being enforced.
Now, it's interesting. Hogs and Heifers was padlocked not because of their violation of the cabaret anti-dance laws.
Oh, it was kind of dirty.
But rather because they couldn't meet the rent due to the gentrification that has happened down in the Meatpacking District and other places, where traditional venues all of a sudden had these greedy landlords coming down and raising their rent 10 times what it had been before.
Yeah, well, welcome to New York City.
Please. And so Hogs and Heifers no more. But are you sure, Juliet Huddy, you never got up on the bar of Hogs and Heifers, took your bra off, and put it up on the wall
I've
with the 18,000 Playtex bras?
No, I've never gone on to a bar anywhere and done that. Now, I I'm a karaoke person. I will humiliate myself in that way, but you'll never see me taking my bra. I'm not going to do the sexy dancing. It's just not my thing. I can't do it. I don't look good doing it.
Let's open it up for a discussion. Our number is 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222.
You know, men would get up there on the bar, too. There have been men. I could see you doing
that. How would you know that if you hadn't frequented
it? Well, I didn't frequent it, but I know that there were other... I'm not specifically talking about Hogs and Heifers, but other establishments where, like, people would get crazy, and then you see guys up there.
This is where Kevin Spacey and his boyfriend would be up on the bar there dancing, right?
Perhaps. I can see you doing that, though. I can see you That's what you basically did at my party, at my loft party.
Yeah.
And I had everybody over there.
Yeah, oh,
you
yeah.
basically just took over the
dance floor. The dance,
you know,
floor,
the dance floor.
Put on a Curtis Lewa performance.
It was amazing. You actually were really good. I was impressed.
You know, I used to go to the after hours clubs in the South Bronx when I was managing that McDonald's back in the mid 70s, just before I started the Guardian Angels.
Back in the day.
And that's where you could dance. Unfortunately, everything else illegal was going on in the after hour clubs.
Those were like scary places. Did you ever go to like the Lime?
No, the Slime
Light. You didn't? Why would you say that?
Oh, it was a slimy place. I went there.
What does that mean?
One time, the Slime Light.
Why was it slimy?
Ah, they're just the types of people who were at First of all, it was in a church. It was in a church.
That was the coolest part about it.
Oh, no, I hated that.
Why?
It felt like you were committing a sin by walking into a church, and then you were watching all these decadent and debauchery acts taking place.
Like,
it was really.
They had rock shows and stuff like that.
It sleaves me
out. God, this is coming from the guy that like goes and does his little EDM festivals.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I got to tell
with
you,
with the glow sticks and the.
You know, you needed to be tested for STDs just for being in the Slime Light.
My husband went there all the time.
Well, you better get him tested for STDs. Just breathing the air there.
No.
Anyway, let's go to Rocco, who's calling from Brooklyn.
Rocco.
Welcome to Curtis and Juliet Huddy here on WABC. Rocco.
I bet he was at the Lime Light.
Yeah, not only that, you could dance in my club anytime you want. And Curtis, you were doing after-hour clubs in the South Bronx, and you're talking about what's going on in the Limelight, man? Come on. You know,
that's right.
You know what I'm saying? I've seen these two guys smoking the joint on one end on the other end. You know, they're nuts. It was crazy stuff going on back then. And your McDonald's was right by Arthur Avenue. You had the most protected McDonald's, if you want to call that the South Bronx. We're going to go to geography class now.
I didn't say the McDonald's was in the South Bronx. The after-hours clubs I went to were down the 149th and 3rd Avenue, that neck of the woods.
Okay, well, you're down. When you go further down to Cypress Avenue and Brook Avenue, that's the murder capital of the world in the late 60s and the early 70s.
There were no clubs down there.
There were after-hour clubs in all the South Bronx.
Rocco knows.
Not
Rocco, where did you go? Like, what were your places?
Come on. Brooklyn, we had 3rd Avenue, 86th Street, man. Brooklyn was hopping back then, man. They even brought a guy in there, Travolta, to film a movie in one of our clubs. Brooklyn was hopping back. So was the parts of the Bronx. But the Bronx boys would go to Westchester. Those are the clubs.
Westchester? Wait, how old are you?
I'm in my 60s.
Oh, my God. Okay,
well,
so you are a compatriot.
What the cops would do is they would go into the gin mills, they'd go into the dance clubs, and they would look to get on the payroll.
Oh, yeah.
In order to avoid...
Doesn't that still go on?
Not as much. Okay. Not like it used to be.
Ah, the good old days.
1-800-848-WABC. Let's go to Dana, who's calling from Huntington. Welcome to Curtis and Juliet Huddy here at WABC. Dana?
Hey, Dana.
Juliet, how are you? I'd love to take you out to Hogs and Heifers, wherever, and I would let you see you dance on the table. You would never have to be embarrassed in front of me.
Listen, Dana, first of all, my husband would have to come with us. Secondly, I just went and when I just went to the loo just to freshen up just a few minutes ago.
The loo,
found
the toilet.
Whatever. It has a large... I just saw gray hair. My first gray hair that I have seen on my person. So I don't know. I think you might want to go maybe skew a couple decades younger than me. You wouldn't want to see me dancing on a bar.
No, I'm probably your age. What band is your husband? What's the name of his band?
He was in Blackwater Rising and Stereo Mud, and now he's putting together a new one.
Oh, yeah?
Yep.
Does he need a writer-singer?
Does he need a writer-singer? I don't know. You know, we'll get your info.
I have metal lyrics.
Okay.
You're being solicited here.
John is listening. He listens to the show. So.
I see. Well, you're being solicited here.
Hold on. I'll tell you what, Dana. Go to Mulcahy's in Wantagh on Saturday and come talk to us. We'll be there seeing Blackwater Rising and a couple other bands.
You're permitted to get up and dance?
Well, you bang your head, and I do that. And I shriek like.
Well, explain.
Like psycho.
Explain that.
You've got a lot of the really like kind of some screamy heavy metal that's played or Blackwater Rising, for instance, the band that you really love. You know,
is there like a mosh pit? You know, where people can jump on the stage and then dive into the audience there.
There will probably. I mean, there is a band that's playing. I think it's called Last in Line. They're actually the headliners. They have guys from Black Sabbath.
Did you
and
ever
Ozzy.
Get so half in the bag that you
I
got up on the stage and jumped into the mosh pit?
No. But my husband has done that. He actually was at He was at an, I think he was Iron Maiden. He like jumped, he got on the stage and then he jumped off and he tried to crowd surf and they didn't like it. And he did, he jumped off a speaker, like an amp, I think, yep. at a Pantera show.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's great. Oh,
but I don't do that. Thing.
You mean to tell me he was getting his soup and a sandwich at Pantera, and he jumped off a speaker into the crowd there that was waiting to get served?
No, no, no. The band. The band.
Oh, the band.
Yes.
The band. Well, I actually did that Panera. One time. I enjoyed
did
the
you?
Mosh pit.
I can see you being, I can see you liking that. And I have to tell you, it's weirdly, they're all very respectful of each other from what I've seen. Like, they'll start going in that circle, you know,
You got to hope, like, you know, when all of a sudden you're out there as a cheerleader, that the male cheerleader catches the female cheerleaders when they spin them up in the air.
Well, I don't really see a lot of, yes, exactly. Well, everybody's very, it's a kind of like a loving aggression. They run in these circles and they kind of push into each other. But then if somebody falls down, you know, the guy that just pushed you would be like, hey, man, sorry, man. It's the weirdest. Coolest thing.
Well, they start slamming into one another.
They do, but it's done in a loving way.
Well, what is that? How is that a loving thing?
Well, because it's like it's an aggressive, like, we're going to get it all out of our system, but we all like each other and we all support each
it's
other.
It's like this giving a beat down to everybody that happens to be in
listen,
the pit.
This is your thing. You should love this
kind
of stuff.
No, I understand that. I understand that. But for most people, I would think if they're going to a club, that's the last thing in the world they want to get involved with.
You know, a lot of these people that go to these metal shows, that this is their thing. They can't wait for the pit to start and, like, the circle to just start going. And it is something to see.
Well, I would be fascinated to find out from any of our listeners if they've actually participated in the mosh pit,
come on, call
dived
in
off the stage, and what kind of experience did they have? Or were they then calling 1-800-LIAR-FOR-HIRE, some lawyer out there, because of all the damages that they incurred?
Hold on a second. You know, the lead singer of Lamb of God, a big, big, big metal group, they had just landed at the airport in Prague in the Czech Republic. This was a few years back. They get off. They didn't even get off the plane. Some officials come on the plane. They bring the band into this private area in the airport, and the lead singer is arrested, and he was charged with murder because a couple of years earlier, when they were playing in Prague, some kid jumped on stage and he fell off the stage, or he was pushed off the stage, and they accused the lead singer Randy Bly of doing that, and he went on trial, and this guy went back to the Czech Republic to go on trial. That is what a stand-up man he is. He wrote a book about it. Phenomenal.
You know how it was
story.
Resolved?
He was acquitted because they found out that if the kid that actually fell, there was some situation and he wasn't pushed off the stage, or somebody saw him. I don't know. I can't remember what it was. But it's a really, really interesting story. When they get to town, we definitely have to have him come in here.
Our number is 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222.
He knows the city. Live, local, on it. Curtis Lewa, 77 WABC.
Oh, the whirling dervish diva, Juliet Huddy. She's up on the bar at the old Hodge and Heifers, pulling out her Playtex extra padded bra.
Oh, jeez.
Tacking it to the wall with the 18,000 other. You and Julia Roberts, right?
Oh, I have nothing in common with Julia Roberts, I can assure you.
Anyway, let's go to Ricky, who's been patiently waiting in Bayside. Welcome to WABC, Ricky.
Ricky.
All right. Hi, what's up there? You know, I followed Nine Inch Nails, and we would, you know, have the mosh pit put out there. We'd dive into the crowd. Slam dancing going on. I mean, my opinion always was, if you were looking to take somebody out, you could take them out in a mosh pit if you really wanted to.
God, yes, definitely. Especially if you're jumping off of, you know, the amp or whatever those things are that are piled on the side of the stage. Not amps. What are they called? I don't know. Big, giant things. The speakers, I guess. That's whatever they
giant,
are.
Big, giant speakers. Big, some guy a header into the crowd or something, and everybody just steps away. You know, the show's over there. But bottom line is, it's a lot of fun, but you got to really be in good condition to do it. I prefer to have more ladies in the mosh pit than guys, of course.
I told these rules back there.
You know, but he was
it's
going...
the fourth time this guy's gotten through all day. Hey, Matt Dahl, you must have a tin ear.
Oh.
Anyway, let's go to Doug, who's calling from Trenton. Welcome to Curtis and Juliet Huddy here on WABC. Doug.
Hey, Doug.
Hey guys, I'm Doug, S-I-T-T-E-L, Sattel. I'm sitting in jail. I had to record a phone conversation of a court asking me to send them $10,000 bribe money.
I'm so scared about where this conversation's going.
I brought those tapes to the authorities, and I recorded them in my YouTube number 8 and 22, saying that they're going to put me in jail first, and they're going to order a psych exam. So I just had court, and they say, well, you can't go anywhere because you don't have any stability. And I said, you guys have the chief of police fired me from my job and from HSBC. And I called the state the other day, and I told them that the social worker opens my mail here and reads it back to me, so I can't mail them anything.
This is all very plausible. Very plausible,
Doug.
Yeah,
S-I-T-T-E-L on YouTube, number 8 and 22. And
that's
number 8, Chicago, says she runs the hospital. They're telling me that I can't even write any grievances.
Me away, ho-ho, hee-hee, ha-ha, to the funny farm where life is beautiful.
We're going to be talking about a bar in Brooklyn for some reason.
I'll be happy to see those nice young men in their clean white coats.
It's a whack job, right? He's got all the furniture upstairs and rearranged in the wrong rooms.
Well,
he brought a smile to Ken Duffy's face.
It was very hopeful. I was very hopeful. He had a bar in Brooklyn.
Well, let's go to Lee, who's calling from Bayonne, the gateway to the world. Welcome to WABC, Lee.
Yes, hi, Curtis and Juliet. You were talking about clubbing earlier in the late 70s. I'm a college professor. I'm teaching a class in film, and I just showed Saturday Night Fever last night as pop culture.
Great
but
movie.
But how realistic was it?
Hope you're feeling okay. Get a glass of water there.
Gee, is that the result of watching Saturday Night Fever last night?
Yeah, especially the Verrazano part. I travel that bridge all the time, and I just, even back in the 70s, I can't even imagine those scenes happening.
Well, I mean, it was, you know, it was Hollywood, but I can imagine John Travolta, a guy like that, walking down the street, like very Curtis-like.
Club Zanzibar, and you oftentimes you would have DJs come who were from, like, at that time, KTU, the Supreme Cuisine Station, and they would rock the mics. And you would have a crowd, Lee, that would come from throughout the tri-state area, and you would have dance-off competitions, just like you saw on Saturday Night Fever.
Yeah.
Where oftentimes... Yeah, there was side money bet. That meant the wise guys were sitting at tables, and they were looking at the couples, and they were betting on the outcome. So you know the fix had to be in with the refs.
I think Lee just hung out with appropriate people, frankly.
Now, Lee.
Right, Lee?
Lee, you never went.
I was too young, but just watching it again, it was really a rough movie.
Well, yes, it
I think it's the 40-year anniversary of when that came
don't
out.
Don't say that. That's horrifying.
I think so. But anyway, Ken Duffy.
Like thanks for that, Curtis.
You
appreciate.
Were a regular attendee at Hogs and Heffers down in the meatpacking
district.
Oh, yeah,
that was me. Yeah.
You ever been there?
Yep.
You saw Juliet Huddy there, right?
Never.
You saw her there.
Once me too. Yeah.
Did you see her Playtex bra up there on the wall with the 18,000 other bras?
Company.
I don't see her doing that.
Oh, yeah.
No.
Oh, yeah.
Not my bag.
All ginned up.
Not my gig.
Half out of her mind.
I went there, walked in, walked out. It was not my
Yeah, right? Either. It's like, oh, please.
It's kind of that.
Well, what's wrong? You didn't like Julia Roberts and everyone else up on the bar?
Well, if Julia Roberts was there, that'd be great.
Hey, but wait a minute.
Maybe stay a little longer and then leave.
But anyway, there are two guys that are in this studio right now. I can't imagine sitting in a male spa. One is naturally Ken Duffy, and the other is Curtis Sliwa. And you're going to have to convince us up next, Juliet Huddy, why we should join this new trend that men are involving of not just getting pedicures and manicures, but a complete spa treatment from the tip of their nose to
men,
the tip of their toes.
Man up and call in and let us know, let Curtis and let every man listening know that men actually do go to spas and it's not dainty
it
and it's not girly.
Unmanly.
No, it is not. And men, step up, because I know a lot of you, including Mr. Fattoruso, like to go to the spa every now and then.
1-800-848-WABC. But first, Ken Duffy, give us the news headlines and updates.
Live, local, on it. Curtis Sliwa.
Curtis Sliwa.
77 WABC.
Get up on the table and jump.
I'm like ready to reject out vomit. Who is this?
Oh, come on. This is Lamb of God.
And
it's called
this,
Redneck.
This is going to induce me to go into some male spa and get a complete overdue from the tip of my nose to the tip of my toes, as many men are doing now in an unmanly way.
It's a thing that men do, and don't act like you guys out there do not love it when your wife says or your girlfriend says, honey, come with me to the spa this weekend. Please, let's share a little romance, you know, and do it together.
So you mean... I would actually have to go to the East End of Long Island with all those out-the-caca ladies,
Wait,
the gurneys.
What?
you know, the Gurney's Way where they put on those mud cake
beds. Oh, not that kind of, I mean, that's great. But no, just the spas in the city or spas wherever, out in Westchester.
What, and get a pedicure and a manicure and do an unmanly thing?
Go in, like Bliss Spa. You go in and you walk into the little quiet room and they take you to the little locker area, just the men's locker area, and you have your little locker and you put your stuff in it and you get your little slippers and your comfy bathrobe. And then you go and you sit out and you listen to trickling water while you sip on some cucumber.
Is it a male attendant or a female attendant?
Oftentimes it's a female attendant.
Well, now you sparked my interest.
Yeah. Well, and oftentimes it's a male attendant as well.
Oh, forget that.
It just depends. Come on. Have you been to a spa before?
No.
Why?
No, I've been to a spa when women have attended, but I've never been to a spa to get personally serviced at a spa.
Okay, and so why
remember,
is that?
I mean, remember the woman that was doing the nails initially, she looked at my nails, she said, oh, you need a manicure. I said, over my dead body, I'm not getting no manicure.
And ladies, you can call in on this one too.
Well, let's give the numbers. 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222.
You know, when you sit there, my friend has a nail salon over in Hoboken, New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
The V Spot, it's called. And I'll go in there, and it's a very feminine type of place. Typically, there are men that go in there, and they sit there, and they're heterosexual men, or they're homosexual. It doesn't matter, either one. But, you know, these big, tough guys like you, who think it's too foofy, they go in there, and they just like to kind of chill out. They're on their cell phones, you know, doing a little bit of catch-up with work, and they're getting their toes cleaned, massaged, and it's very relaxing. It takes away, you know, it takes you out of the craziness, out of the grit and grime of the city.
You know, it's interesting because we had as a guest at Stage 17 on Monday, Mike Piazza, the Italian Stallion,
yes,
who always talked about how he liked pedicures, along with the Italian Stallion roided up as he was for the New York Yankees before Jason Giambi. He used to go for pedicures. I don't care how well you perform in sports, whether it's induced by steroids or not. Mm-hmm. The fact is, I cannot imagine a man sitting in a seat and allowing attendants, men or women or eunuchs, to be working on his nails.
Well, for you, it's
his
not about
toenails.
They're not making them pretty. They're taking the little like scraper thing and it goes underneath the toenails and it takes the grime. Oh, it's wonderful. You're like excavating all the grossness from your body.
Let's go to the phones and see if you can induce me to cross over the Maginot line. First off in the queue is Bill calling from New Jersey. Welcome to Curtis and Juliet Huddy here on WABC. Billy.
Hey, Bill.
Hey guys, good show. Heard us. Now, Curtis, back off a little on the hostile work environment, if you would. I want Juliet to stay around a while. And let me say, I generally agree with Curtis that getting a spa treatment's a little bit metrosexual, but about 30 years ago when I was overseas in the Marine Corps in Korea, my buddies and I would go into town a couple times a month. You know, we're living in tents, field showers and all that. Go into town, get a haircut, shave, and a cucumber facial of some kind,
yep,
and a massage, and it was pretty nice. And
heavenly.
All on the up and up, no funny business.
Wait. Bill. You mean the kimchi cuties were taking care of Marines, and you didn't leave with a happy moment?
No, it was all on the up and up. Girl spoke only Korean. We knew about 20 words of Korean, and it was a good time. All good, clean fun.
See?
And but it was a great feeling to get really clean and you know, and have that little massage. And
why couldn't you clean your nails yourself? Why couldn't you clean your tail?
Because you don't have the right equipment. You don't have the right tools. Basically, this guy, he's saying, you can go. You can go with my husband who looks, I mean, I love my husband, very handsome man, but he can look kind of scary to, you know, women who live out on Long Island and they don't, you know, see these guys that hang out with him because he's, you know, the musician guy.
What, does he look like a predator?
No. No, he's very handsome. He kind of looks like a little mix of Charles Manson and Jesus together.
Oh, my God.
But he's got the devil tattoo on his leg. But he goes in there and he goes and gets his he frightens the women as soon as he sits down. But he gets his pedicure next to me. We'll be talking. We'll just be checking on our phones. And then he goes and he lays down on that, you know, the chair massage things. And Big Mike, as we call him from Capri Nails out in Oceanside, he comes over and he just beats the hell out of John, gives him a great, like, chair massage.
So your husband is a masochist.
Pretty much. Well, he's married to me.
SNM. That's part of heavy metal. I understand.
No,
S&M,
it's not
that's
like
all
that.
Part of that.
No, it's not.
But anyway, let's go to David calling from Westchester. Welcome to Curtis and Juliet Huddy here on WABC. Dave?
Hey, Dave Burley calling out of Westchester.
What's up?
Wow. Great. This is a great topic. I wanted to get a pedicure for years, but I was petrified to go in there because that's for women. And now I'm addicted to it.
Mm-hmm. What is it you like?
I love getting pedicures every 2 weeks.
What's your favorite part of the pedicure?
Just the way they work on it. I can't even get down there. And I started studying martial arts again. So your feet have to be clean. They have to be clean. So I forced myself to go in, and now I'm addicted to it.
See, so there you go.
Now you're claiming as a martial artist because you don't want to infect your fellow martial artists by leaving some kind of an element on the mat, that you're really doing this for the benefit of your fellow martial artists, right? Getting pedicures.
I also thought I had very ugly feet. I didn't wear sandals for a long time, and boy, they clean them up and they shine now.
You don't get the clear nail polish, you know, to make them really shiny, do you?
I've tried it.
Did you?
I've tried it. Oh,
okay.
Sure.
All right. Well, yep. The buffing, I think a lot of my guy friends will stop with the buffing, but the clear nail polish, hey, look, you know, I know football players from the Giants and the Jets who go over into my friend's salon, and they get buffed and polished, and
so
they're very manly.
You mean
people.
To tell me I should get a pedicure so that I don't end up with Ebola, the flesh-eating virus? Is that what you're suggesting?
Just so you look like a refined gentleman.
Let's go to Sam, who's calling from Suffren. Welcome to Curtis and Juliet Huddy here at WABC. Sammy?
Hey, so I think actually this is a topic where it gives the liberals an opportunity to push their extreme agenda.
Oh, God. Okay, how?
On something that is, like, totally okay to be in a balanced sense, and they'll be like, there's something that they can push their proposed false ignorance, which is so untrue. And
what does that have to do with being unmanly and getting a pedicure and a manicure?
It's manly.
I think it's totally okay, and they might push their agenda where they'll say that it's Republicans and then the conservatives think it's totally not okay, and then they'll have this.
Sam, I think you need a bit of a stabilizer. I have a series of pharmaceutical products I'm going to recommend to you.
Don't listen to him, Sam. He's just feeling unmanly right now because showing your manliness is when you go in and you're okay with accepting.
But this guy from Suffren somehow tried to turn this into a political issue, like a lot of our listeners
he's
do.
He knows that we talk about politics
Let's go to Anthony.
Good job.
Anthony, who's calling from Staten Island. Welcome to Curtis and Juliet Huddy here on WABC, Anthony.
Yeah, what's up there, Curtis? Hi, Juliet.
Hey, Anthony.
You know what I see? A lot of guys in Staten Island down Page Avenue. There's a nail salon full of guys getting pedicures, manicures.
You sound disgusted by that.
Am I disgusted by that? I wouldn't go.
Me why?
I know that. I don't know. I do myself.
You don't get the beauty of it though. It's nice to be able to sit back and just kind of think about things. You know, and they give you the little massage, and sometimes they do the little special. Yeah, points, you know, in your foot, and it's just it changes your world.
Anthony, the next thing you'll be agenda bended. Don't listen to him.
Years ago, when I won, they told me $10 extra because you got crocodile feet. They told me.
Well, they have a thing where they can scrape. It's like a little scraper thing, and it actually scrapes off like your dead skin. Oh, it's amazing.
Is that like while you scrape off ice off your window shield?
It's a very similar thing. But we're not just talking about nail salons. I mean, we're talking about going in and getting the facials,
all
the extractions.
Shiatsu.
There's nothing better than taking out you go and you pull the ingrown hair out. Oh, the little pod on the end.
You sound excited.
I love this.
Are you a sadist?
What? No, it doesn't hurt.
You might be into S&M.
I'm not.
That's part of the thing. Okay. Let's go to Lou in Coney Island, the big CI. Welcome to Curtis and Juliet Huddy on WABC. Louie.
Hey, how you doing, Curtis? How are you? Listen, I got to tell you something. I was a dock builder and a diver for 10 years. And if you know anything about Local 1456, these are very hardworking guys. We do forms. We prizes, sheets. We work on water. And my hands and my feet
Now, you said divers. You must be down in Davy Jones's locker because we're losing you here, Lou. Losing you. See if you can move around a little bit.
He was supporting my argument.
All right, see if we can. Your meds there, poco, poco. I got to put you on hold. See if you can call back, Lou, and we'll bring you right to the top of the queue. Anyway, let's go to Jim, who is calling from Tom's River. Welcome to Curtis and Juliet here at WABC. Jimmy?
What's going on, boys and girls? I'm definitely a fan. I love that salt scrub on the legs.
Oh, that's amazing. Amazing. Hey, are you familiar with Huddy Park?
Huddy Park, of course.
Park. It's my ancestor, Captain Joshua Huddy.
Let me ask you a question, Jim. When did you decide to become a metrosexual agenda bender and give up your manliness?
Don't listen to him.
I'll put it to you this way. I had a girlfriend earlier before I got married and talked me into it, and I was sold on that. But it has helped me in career-wise. I've been in sales, making deals with women and stuff, and they definitely can see your hands. As well as, not your feet, but your head. I didn't cut the calls and deals that hard.
A man with shellac on his nails. 1-800-848-WABC. So you see, you weren't able to convince me to go to a spa.
You know, for the single men out there, you can meet lots of ladies hanging out, sitting next to them.
You could do that at a laundromat, right?
Yeah, like it's much more comfortable.
Walking your little doggy around, and the woman says, "Oh, he's so friendly to dogs. He must be nice to children and women
too."
Yes,
you look cute with a chihuahua.
Oh, please stop it, Juliet, honey. Stop it. I'm not going to be unmanly.